Hello, I'm Sebastian. Welcome to Nine Gnar Trees podcast. Today, I will summarize and review the book. The Case Against Socialism is a political and economic polemic by Rand Paul, written with Kelly Ashby Paul and published in 2019. The book argues against socialist ideology from a libertarian, pro-market perspective, using historical examples and policy analysis to claim that central planning weakens prosperity, individual liberty, and institutional accountability. Rather than presenting socialism as a merely theoretical alternative to capitalism, it frames the issue as a practical choice between market coordination and state control. The book is aimed at readers interested in economics, political philosophy, and American conservative thought, especially those seeking a direct critique of government expansion. Its purpose is not to offer a neutral survey of socialism, but to make a forceful case that socialist systems repeatedly fail in real-world settings and tend to move toward coercion and authoritarianism. I will give you key takeaways from this book. Firstly, socialism as a system of collective ownership and centralized planning. The book begins by defining socialism in structural terms: collective ownership of the means of production, control over distribution, and a political commitment to reducing class differences through government direction. This definition matters because Paul treats socialism not as a vague concern for fairness, but as a system that replaces decentralized decision-making with top-down administration. By emphasizing the planner's role, he sets up the core tension of the book: the more power is shifted from individuals and markets to the state, the more economic choices become subject to political command. That framing allows him to argue that socialism is not simply about generous social policy, but about the concentration of control in fewer hands. The book uses this distinction to contrast socialism with capitalism, which it presents as a system that relies on private ownership, voluntary exchange, and dispersed knowledge rather than centralized authority. Secondly, why markets are presented as more effective than state control. A central line of argument is that capitalism is superior because it coordinates economic activity through competition, prices, and incentives. Paul presents markets as adaptive systems that reward innovation and allow resources to move toward more productive uses, while socialist planning is portrayed as rigid and vulnerable to misallocation. The practical point is that economic life contains too much dispersed information for planners to manage efficiently. When the state substitutes its judgment for market signals, shortages, waste, and stagnation become more likely. The book uses this argument to connect economic freedom with material prosperity, claiming that capitalism does not only create wealth, but also protects the conditions that make wealth creation possible. In this view, market discipline is not an abstract ideal. It is the mechanism by which societies avoid the failures that arise when political authorities try to direct production, prices, and distribution from above. Thirdly, Venezuela and other historical examples as warnings against socialism. The book relies heavily on historical illustration, especially the collapse of Venezuela, to show what Paul sees as the predictable result of socialist policy. Venezuela functions as the clearest contemporary case in the book because it allows him to connect abstract theory to visible economic breakdown, including scarcity, inflation, and broad social decline. More broadly, the book uses socialist regimes and policy experiments as cautionary examples to argue that similar patterns repeat across time and place. The historical method is not a neutral description. It is intended to demonstrate that socialism's failures are not accidental but systemic. By returning to well-known cases, Paul tries to make the book's critique accessible to readers who may not follow economic theory closely. The argument depends on comparison. Countries that expand state control are presented as examples of what happens when political ambition overrides market discipline and property. Fourthly, the claim that socialism tends to erode freedom and expand coercion. One of the book's most important themes is the link between socialism and authoritarianism. Paul argues that once the state is responsible for directing economic life, it must also acquire greater coercive power to enforce compliance, suppress resistance, and manage dissent. This is why the book treats authoritarianism not as a side effect, but as a natural political outcome of socialist organization. The reasoning is that central planning cannot function through voluntary agreement alone. It requires rules, surveillance, and enforcement. That claim broadens the book beyond economics into civil liberty and constitutional limits. The critique is therefore not only that socialism is inefficient, but also that it alters the relationship between citizens and the state by reducing personal autonomy. In Paul's framework, economic control and political control are inseparable. So any expansion of socialist governance is also an expansion of the state's ability to direct everyday life. Lastly, a libertarian defense of American liberty, limited government, and moral responsibility. The book is also an ideological defense of a broader political tradition that Paul associates with American liberty, constitutional restraint, and Judeo-Christian moral culture. He presents socialism as a threat not only to wealth creation, but to the civic habits that sustain a free society, including individual responsibility, private initiative, and respect for limited government. This gives the book a normative dimension beyond policy debate. It is arguing for a particular vision of society in which people retain control over their work, property, and choices. The emphasis on liberty also helps explain the book's tone and audience. It speaks to readers who see political freedom and economic freedom as mutually reinforcing rather than separate issues. In that sense, the book is not simply anti-socialist. It is a restatement of libertarian and conservative priorities in response to renewed interest in socialist ideas among younger Americans and contemporary activists. In conclusion, The Case Against Socialism will be most useful to readers who want a concise, forceful, and ideologically clear critique of socialism from a libertarian American perspective. It is especially relevant for students of political economy, conservative readers, and anyone trying to understand why socialism remains such a persistent point of debate in U.S. The practical value of the book lies in its emphasis on how economic systems shape incentives, institutional behavior, and personal freedom. Even readers who disagree with Rand Paul will come away with a clearer sense of the arguments that link central planning to inefficiency, corruption, and political coercion. What distinguishes this book from many other anti-socialist titles is its combination of contemporary political urgency and straightforward, accessible language. It is not written as an academic treatise, and it does not aim for theoretical neutrality. Instead, it presents a direct argument rooted in historical examples, market principles, and constitutional concerns. For readers seeking a readable entry point into the modern conservative case against socialism, it offers a focused and recognizable statement of that position. If you would like to support Rand Paul, you can buy the book through the Amazon link I've provided in the podcast description. After reading the book, please let me know what you think and share your thoughts. See you around.